Welcome to Curiously Enough. This is a space to shine a light on the shadows we hide in. This is a conversation to relieve the heaviness of silenced topics. Here's to getting honest and getting real, feeling inspired and less alone. Thank you for joining me on the road to rediscovering the truth of who we are. I am absolutely thrilled to have Tommy Rosen on our show today. Tommy is a yoga teacher and a recovery expert with advanced certifications in both Hatha and Kundalini yoga. He has 26 years of continuous recovery from acute drug and alcohol addiction. Tommy is one of the pioneers in the field of yoga and recovery, assisting others to holistically transcend addictions of all kinds. Tommy is the founder and host of the Recovery 2.0 Beyond Addiction online conference series and the Move Beyond group coaching program. He leads Recovery 2.0 retreats and workshops internationally and presents regularly at yoga conferences and festivals. In Tommy's book, Recovery 2.0, Move Beyond Addiction and Upgrade Your Life, he shares his past struggles with addiction and the powerful insights that have helped him to identify and break free from the obstacles that have stood in the way of his recovery. Tommy also has the Recovery 2.0 Power Hour podcast, where he interviews leaders in the field of addiction and recovery, spiritual teachers, medical doctors, nutritionists, yoga, meditation teachers, and wisdom keepers who are all shedding light on living beyond addiction. Tommy has been able to talk and work with people such as Gabby Bernstein, Joe Polish, and Dr. Bruce Lipton. His podcast helps listeners tap into new perspectives on addiction and cutting-edge philosophies and practices to heal and thrive on the amazing path of recovery. If you want to know more about Tommy, the work he's doing, please do yourself a favor and check him out on Instagram, Facebook, or his website, r20.com. Awesome. Well, welcome.
Thank you so much, Grace. What an introduction.
Now you have to live up to it. No, just kidding.
Exactly.
Well, there's so much in there. Why don't we start with your story of recovery, what it used to be like, and then maybe we can get into what it's like now?
Sure. Well, my life in active addiction, active drug addiction, really began, gosh, you know, the way I look at addiction is I look at it as any behavior you continue to do despite the fact that it brings a negative consequence into your life. So that often broadens the perspective on addiction to include just about anything that we can do to distract ourselves or, you know, whenever we feel a negative result from an action, but we keep taking that action. To me, that's addiction. And for me, that began in childhood, really around food, particularly sugar as a kid. And I would describe my childhood to you as bouncing off the walls from one sugar event to the next. So I was always moving, always hyperactive, very difficult time concentrating. There was never really a moment in my childhood when I sat still. As a result, I ended up getting sick quite a bit. I ended up experiencing things like migraine headaches, very low energy, but spurts like incredibly hyperactive at the same time. So I set myself up for a life of addiction unknowingly in childhood. And so the natural progression when I reached my teenage years was to start to experiment with some stronger substances, stronger meaning stronger than sugar, mm-hmm. things that had, you know, a bigger impact. Something I could, let's say it was an upgraded high to the high I was feeling from sugar. And the first place that really worked for me was marijuana, cannabis. And so I started a long-term love affair with marijuana, essentially, when I was 13 years old. And through that relationship, I developed a lifestyle that depended upon that plant being involved in my life in every way. It was in my life, something that I did. It was in a part of my community. All the people that I hung out with were also smoking pot, or, you know, we had this lifestyle where it just revolved around getting high, pretty much. And after a while, that sort of progressed my curiosity and my desire to be fulfilled and to feel great in life continued. And so I started looking to other drugs and other substances. And it just got a little bit more intense as the years went by. Ultimately, I ended up as a cocaine addict and a heroin addict and an alcoholic, and I had completely lost my way by the time I was 22. That's sort of what it was like there. I mean, there's so much to say and so many angles from which I could tell you the tale. But for listeners, I just want them to understand that the underlying causes of addiction, a sense of separation, a sense of urgency, like being overwhelmed with life, not being able to relax, not being able to slow down, something underneath bothering me. Like those causes and conditions were there in my body, in my mind, long before I ever picked up drugs. And so when I put drugs down, guess what was there waiting for me? You know, all of those very same things had not been solved, had not been worked out. I had not grown. I had not woken up. I had not grown up. I still had to deal with those aspects of myself that were painful, confusing, difficult, like we all do. We all have to do that. I just would get to it through severe addiction and then ultimately recovery.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. I think a lot of our stories look similar, and that is what is so, I don't even know if I have a word for it. It's just moving, because there, you know, details might change, but these big themes, everyone's story of addiction looks something like that. You know, it starts early.
Keep showing up.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know how you said it, and for some people it takes a little longer maybe to think back to childhood and the environment and how do you perceive the world? Was it through, you know, the highs of sugar? Was it, you know, what was it? And then eventually recovery is looking underneath those addictions. What was propelling you to not want to feel whatever that feeling was? Was it fear? Was it, you know, you can't relax? It's neat to hear the links in my story or other people's stories. They're all very similar. So my question then would be, when did recovery 2.0 for you personally strike as I need more in my recovery?
Yeah, great question. That moment would not actually come for many, many years into my recovery, my early years of recovery. Drugs and alcohol, as I had said, had been taken away. I released them from my life. I grew through the amazing support and the process of the 12 steps. I grew to reach a point where I no longer desired to use drugs or alcohol. It was literally gone from my life. I wasn't thinking about it and sort of fending off thoughts and, you know, having to resist the temptation. Like the temptation truly was gone, and it's been gone ever since then for like the last 25 years. So in that state, when you're no longer craving drugs and alcohol, well, you start to live life, right? So you start to experience relationships on a different level. You start to, you know, look toward, you know, what am I going to do with my time, my energy? What are my interests? What are my passions? What do I want to get involved in? You know, where's my adventure? What am I going to do to keep my body in shape? You know, and you're going to sort of start to live your life. And that's what's supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. And as you start to live your life, you start to encounter joy, certainly. There's going to be joy, but you also encounter challenges. The joy is wonderful because it's joy, and you get to feel what it feels like to be, you know, happy or excited or for a moment you feel a sense of relief and you're present for whatever reason. And that's wonderful. But it's in the challenge where you're going to learn. It's the pain. It's the difficulty. And where the pain and the difficulty was for me in early recovery was in relationships with women. So my romantic relationships, that side of my life. Also my desire to create, to have a purposeful, meaningful life, to get involved in some kind of career, to make money and support myself. These were incredibly difficult and hard concepts for me. And I'm so like many people who experience addiction, I think so differently and so outside of the box, and you can't really fit me in a conventional approach to life or to job or to relationships. So all the normal kind of things, anytime I tried to be normal, anytime I tried to follow sort of the way most people do it, it completely backfired in my face and was just so painful. And I saw a bumper sticker the other day. It said, trying to be normal, what were the two most painful moments of my life? Mm. You know, and I think that just sums it up. We have to walk to the beat of our own drum, and we have to find our own way. And so in recovery, that's what's happening for many people, is they're trying to find their way. You're experiencing relationships, you're experiencing jobs and careers and stuff, and you're trying to find your way. So it's like, you know, you're going to find your way, and you're going to learn and grow through the challenges you experience as the days go and the years, you know, go by. Mm-hmm. And so for me, after 9 years of recovery, I had just had my ass kicked by life. I on the one hand, I had experienced lots of joy and lots of freedom from drugs and alcohol, and there certainly were some amazing, amazing experiences, right, in those 9 years. And at the same time, there was this underlying sense of something is still wrong. Something's still missing. What's missing? You know, and I would follow that question. I would seek an answer to that question. What is wrong? What's missing? And it was in my approach to the world, in my approach, my relationships with women in particular, in my the way I am, addicted to creating stress in my life. That's been something my whole life. I've been good at that. So why would that change just because drugs and alcohol went away? No, someone like me would have to learn how to live life like me. And what I realized is the 12 steps gave me this lease, this new lease on life. It gave me a foundation of recovery, but actually it did not help me with my body, my diet, my breath, my relationships. I mean, it did in some ways, but it didn't give me the next lesson plan. It got me to a place. And then from that place of solid recovery, I needed to explore further. And that's when I recognized there's such a desperate need for something called Recovery 2.0.
Oh, I love that. You're telling my story, and it's and it's so many people's stories. That's what's so it like warms my heart to hear someone else but you've not only gone through it, you've created something that fit the need. You know, what comes after this? I need something more, and you've created it. And that's what's so brilliant about all of this. And like I said, this is just so many people experiencing this, but there's a lot of shame to talk about it. And this is something I went through about 2 years ago. I started to really, I'm a little over 4 years sober now. So yeah, 2 years in, I was doing the 12-step recovery. I was still trying to integrate other outside forces like working out and maybe being mindful of eating, but not fully paying attention to that. I was still convinced that 12-step recovery was the way to go because that's what I had learned, which it totally is for a specific time and need. I feel like I need to say that. But there was this moment, which you talked about, where it's like something's wrong. And I hated that because I was like, aren't I doing everything I'm supposed to? You guys are telling me to do these things and I'm doing them and I still feel like I need to fill a void, but I know I can't do that anymore. That's the thing. I have the head, which is what you're saying. Like I knew that wasn't going to work. I knew that I couldn't just chain smoke the pain away. I could try, yes. But I knew in my deepest soul of souls that that wasn't going to fix anything. And so I love that you're talking about that. I feel like I just went on a rant. 12 steps is so important, but there is a world outside of that. And when I started to be open to that is when I felt a little bit more ease in my life. And instead of feeling shame for not going to, you know, more meetings, instead I maybe backed up and went to less, but went to therapy instead, you know? And so it's a balance. So I'm glad we're talking about this.
So important. It's such a key discussion for right now. And I just want to add something to what you just said. There's a, you know, people in the people that I used to hang out with in 12-step programs used to say about people who left that, you know, you needed to keep going to meetings or you were going to be in the grips of the disease. In the grips of the disease. Now that was the term, right? And when I made a conscious decision to start exploring other avenues, it was not a decision based in my desire to go back and use drugs and alcohol. I had no desire to use drugs and alcohol. It was a decision based on my intention to grow further. Now, because I felt that so strongly, I had enough confidence to start to seek and to start to look for other teachers and other avenues, which I found in the deep and beautiful well of yoga and meditation. I found, after going down that well for about 10 years, that the combination of 12-step work, community, and yoga and the path of yoga, working with the body, the breath, calming the mind, meditation, that combination of factors was actually holistic enough to go toe-to-toe with any addiction that could actually help a person overcome it and stay beyond addiction one day at a time. So it was the seeking that was necessary, even though people told me, you need to be careful. But other people have made the mistake of leaving their groups of, you know, whatever fellowship it is in the 12 steps when they truly were not ready. Or what led them to leave was more based on their own frustration than their own solidity and their own confidence in their recovery. And if you leave based on fear and you leave based on insecurity and you leave based on anger or resentment, that usually doesn't lead to a great place. So we have to be very careful when we're making these decisions for ourselves. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's all about the intention of why are you stepping away or why are you maybe not coming as often, whatever that choice is. The intention behind the action is what roots the next action that happens and what that
does
for you. Absolutely. And for me, my choice of stepping back was I need to heal a different part of me that 12-step recovery wasn't serving, but I still went, like, as you said, for community and service purposes. But what I was faced with, which is again, part of my journey and I've forgiven this whole experience, but there was a rumor that I relapsed and that was really hard because it was like, oh my gosh, guys, if only you knew how hard I was working on myself.
Right.
And took the time to ask, hey, why aren't you coming? You would know why. And so I think that's also not just my story, but other people's is if you choose not to go, as long as you're okay with that and you feel good about that and it's not haunting you or keeping you up, like that's good for you right now. That's okay. Because I think recovery is a lot more accepting than we think it is because we want one thing to work. If we could have one answer.
Right.
You know?
Yes. And the problem with that is that, you know, different people need different things at different times.
Absolutely.
And so what I needed 27 years ago when I got sober is different than what I need today. I find myself in a 51-year-old body right now. The needs of this 51-year-old body are different than when I was 24. The needs of that body, the things that I was pursuing, interested in my life, being very much on the front side of life rather than sort of in the middle of what I'm doing now, such a different perspective, such different needs biologically, chemically, different needs spiritually now. So the 12 steps, very powerful, very important part of the equation for me. So grateful that they're there. I still go occasionally check into meetings and I go there. to just show up as an example that it's possible, and also to listen and contribute whatever I can to that particular meeting. And the work of Recovery 2.0, which I mostly focus on in my life right now, is where my service is. It's where my heart is. It's where I see that I can make a contribution that is meaningful for me. So yeah.
Yeah, no, and that's, it's very true. We have different needs at different times. And as we grow in sobriety and recovery, those needs start to become more apparent to us. I think it took me a decent bit of time to even know what the heck my needs were. I really yes. didn't know beyond I'm hungry and I'm tired. And even those I would ignore. Yes. So
yes.
it's so crucial. My gosh, it changes a lot. Like I need to be around someone that's going to affirm me. Holy crap. Like that changed a lot because I'd pick the wrong people for the wrong thing. Mm. Like, you know, picking Johnny to make me feel loved when I know Johnny is a narcissist. So why would I go to Johnny? But I would do it every time. Right. You know, that's just a generic example, but crucial things happen when we start to listen.
No question. That's not so generic. That's a pretty great example, actually.
Sorry, Johnny.
Yes.
speaking of needs, the one thing that when going through your book that spoke to me so much, and I felt like, oh gosh, this is such a great description. If you could expand on it a little, the notion of prehab.
Sure. Well, that word came, the first time I ever heard it was from my teacher, Guru Prem. And he said to me, you know, Tommy, if you went to prehab, you would never have to go to rehab. And I was like, okay, what happens at prehab? And he said, basically three things happen at prehab. You learn how to sit, you learn how to stand, and you learn how to walk. And he expanded on that. And he said, you know, when you're sitting in correct alignment in what's called the comfortable seat. So that word asana in yoga, asana, which is the suffix for every yoga pose ends in asana. And asana just means comfortable seat. So in all these difficult yoga poses, what you're actually looking for is to find a comfortable seat within the pose, whatever it might be. It's the same as in life. So we learn how to sit in the comfortable seat with our butt on the earth, connected to the earth and aware of the planet and aware of what we get from the earth beneath us, which is not just a foundation, but also food, but also our relationship to everything, the way we interact with everything. And that all has to do with learning how to sit correctly. And when I say that, I mean physically. Literally physically learning how to sit up correctly in divine alignment with the heart lifted and the spine extended and navel intelligence taking place in the navel area. And all of this is going on, and learning how to sit was something I certainly never had been taught in my life. And not just learning how to sit, but learning how to sit in a comfortable seat for long periods of time. So contemplation, meditation, but just stillness. Like, what if you were just still? What if you were not pursuing something in this moment? What if you really, really felt complete and you didn't need to go after something? And every day you created these moments where, you know, for 15 minutes or 30 minutes, you just sat still and you allowed your body and your mind to just be there and be calm, what would happen? So that kind of thing happens in prehab. Then you learn how to stand. And Guru Prem was talking about here, you know, on the practical level, literally learning how to stand is the first posture of yoga. So that's called Tadasana, or the comfortable seat of the mountain. So how can you be like a mountain in your stance, sturdy, uplifted, correct use of energy, not using too much, not using too little. So learning how to stand is a big thing. On a more esoteric level, he was talking about, you have to know what you stand for. What do you stand for? Mm. What are the things you would fight for? What are the things that are of interest to you? What are the set of values that you ascribe to? What are you doing to live up to that set of values? If you have a set of values, but you don't live up to that set of values, then you get to experience what every addict gets to experience. And it's painful, 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 because you know that you have hopes and dreams. You know you have plans. You know you're not a bad person, but you just don't seem to be able to change your behavior. And it's so painful. And that's not being able to stand well. So on the path of yoga, we learn how to stand first. And that's another lesson of prehab. And then the third lesson is walking. So that's moving through time and space. How do we move through time and space? So there's an elegance, a grace. As we learn how to walk physically, practically learn how to walk in an uplifted nature, the mechanics are good. We're leading with our heart and we're not leading with our head. And there's this again, there's a divine alignment as we move through time and space. Guru Prem used to say to me, Tommy, make sure wherever you go, you leave something pleasant behind you. Mm. So leaving a pleasant feeling, pleasant vibration everywhere you go, that you entered a space and you made it better. Mm. You made it sweeter. There was something pleasant about you having been there, and people felt uplifted just because you were there. So working on that, that's a lifelong aspiration, a day-to-day aspiration. When you have that, that's advanced. That's an advanced posture of presence, kindness, elegance, grace. And that's also taught in prehab. So anybody who learns those things growing up, you don't go to rehab. You're not becoming a drug addict. You're connected to yourself. You're connected to the earth. You're connected to your values. And you're learning and growing, and you're learning about how to live up to the values that are most important to you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. There's such wisdom there. And I love how simple the, you know, just sit, stand, walk, how simple that is. And then the depth at which each of those go to. For me, the word that I have created for myself, and, you know, this podcast is called Curiously Enough, and that's the basis of the book and everything I do now, but it's similar in going back to that word intention, curious, that for me drives everything. And so just like sitting and understanding the self, that's what curiosity does for me, or standing, what are my values, asking questions, and then getting to that point where it's so natural and you can come back to it, but that walking, that being, and the integration of who you are and not having to think so hard about it anymore. And also I love what you said too, that if we know prehab, or if we've quote unquote gone to prehab when we were young, we wouldn't have to go to rehab. And that's true. I definitely missed a few of those things.
Oh my God. I had none of that.
Yeah. None of it. Yeah. And just also the acceptance that that's kind of what it is. It's just sit, stand, walk. That's all it is. Not much more than that. And I appreciate that. And thank you for expanding. I've obviously read the book and I know what it is, but I wanted to hear your take. And for anyone that hasn't read it, I thought it was just such a neat way of describing life and moving through it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. And I also didn't want to screw up the name of your guru. So you got to say that for me.
No problem.
There was something you mentioned about sitting and the connection with food, being grounded and understanding that our food comes from the earth. And that is something in Recovery 2.0 that is a big pillar of what is next in recovery. Could you talk a little bit more about that, the relationship with food and how that shows up in our life today?
Yes. Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, food was, for me, the first place I sought comfort. So I was not eating, in a sense, I was not eating consciously. I was eating for the high. I was eating for the excitement, for the enjoyment. I wasn't necessarily eating for what it could, for the energy it could give me or the sustained health or building immunity and vitality. And I certainly wasn't eating in a way that was going to lead me to longevity. So I was eating in a way that would tax my heart, tax my lungs, tax my kidneys and my liver. I was eating in a way that ultimately would lead me to the same kinds of degenerative diseases that everybody else is getting, en masse in our society. And for me, there's no question. I'm not going to give you science. I'm just going to tell you what is so obvious to me that I can't believe anyone would need science to back up the statement. You know, some incredibly large percentage of the diseases we're facing, including addiction, come because of the way we relate to food. And that relationship is as primal, as core, as the relationship with our mother or father. It's so important that in recovery, we look at this piece deeply, that we detoxify the body, that we really learn how to be more centered, more reverent, more connected in our food choices, that we learn about cleansing, that we learn about juicing and, you know, remineralizing the body, alkalinity, you know, and bringing optimal health in. And it's so important for anybody. It's particularly important for addicts or people in recovery, because when we feel uncomfortable, we're used to reaching out in not helpful ways to try to solve that discomfort. So it's really important that we develop a relationship with food that brings us to comfort and ease and health. And we get away from addictive eating patterns, and we start to develop true strength and vitality in the body. When you get on that tip, oh my God, I mean, your recovery in life takes a whole new hue, because now you're like excited, not just to be, you know, treating yourself well. It's an act of self-love every time you eat healthy food. Mm. But now you want to tell other people about it, and you have something valuable to share, meaningful. It could become a career for you, or it could just become a hobby. But since we all have to do it, you know, multiple times a day, it becomes, you know, one of the joyful aspects of our life that's non-addictive. That's, wow, like we're really doing a great job, and we're treating ourselves well, and we've got information that's creating possibility for us, and we're moving away from addiction, moving more into recovery, more into health, more into ease. Again, that comfortable seat. You know, not too many people can find the comfortable seat when they're bloated, when they've eaten too much, they have like terrible gas, or they're heavy, and they feel like, God, I just am out of control with food. And we all know it when we're doing that. It's just another addiction, another pattern of behavior that we need to break out of. But once we do that, oh my God, it's like the skies, part, you know, everything becomes possible. Mm. Because the diet was improved. Your mobility, your vitality, your joy, you're able to show up for people, your energy levels, and the systems in your body work better. So how have we not put together the critical importance of diet and recovery? I just don't get it.
Yeah, and it's funny because, thank you for saying that. I love all of that. And I believe it all, and I'm currently truly living that, and it's amazing what it's done to my psyche, to my body, and just the way I look at the world. It's just a different lifestyle. I really don't know how to say it other than that. And that's like not really doing the job of what food does. I mean, it's incredible. But for me, I always heard the power of food and the healing ability of food. And yet I struggled with these physical symptoms, and I wouldn't listen, or I would try a little bit. And then recently, about 6 months ago, I don't need to make it a whole long thing, but this is my reality right now, the physical symptoms started to get really bad. And I've had this my whole life, skin problems. And it got to the point where I was like, this is crazy. So I'm going holistic. I'm done with, you know, yes. It was just a nightmare. And so
good job.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really difficult. It was difficult to say no to every dermatologist and allergist that would keep easily prescribing me things with quick fixes. But eventually my body wasn't working with the quick fixes. So it kind of said, no, we're doing something different before I could choose that. But
exactly.
Which is amazing in itself. But when I started to work with this holistic doctor, we first cut out like gluten and dairy and eggs. And you know, the first thing I did was start to eat gluten-free bread and dairy-free cheese and egg-free tofu eggs. And it was like, oh my gosh, Grace, you're missing the point. Like, where are the veggies? Where are the fruits? Where are the herbs that your doctor, you know, where does that fit in? And now that looks a lot different. I'm like nearly grain-free, and things have gotten worse before they've gotten better. But my gosh, like, it's so hard for us to get to that point.
Well, the good news is Recovery 2.0 exists, and we have a food protocol that anybody can access, and we teach a food course every year, and it's really, really advanced and completely accessible by anybody. So we're coming to that place where this stuff is now becoming, you know, very available to people, and at a cost that's completely accessible. You know, you just think what it costs to go to the doctor, you know, just two or three times. You know, what would you pay to avoid that and to not have to be in that position? So,
No, absolutely. Exciting. And that's awesome. Thank you for mentioning that, because I think it becomes harder and harder to figure out what article should I read? Who should I follow? And, you know, you talk about this, all the diets that there are, and it's really not about the diet. It's just about the simplicity of understanding what role does food play for you? And, you know, are you eating are you eating the gluten-free bread because you're still trying to feel good before you're trying to nourish yourself? And for me, that was it. I had it backwards. First it's nourishing, then it's to feel good. Back to intention. Yes. So thank you for doing that and making that so accessible. I think our world is beginning to, our culture is beginning to recognize the importance of food even more, but there's still so much shame with weight or just the way we look. And then, there's that section. Then just how difficult it is to let go of something like sugar, and just being open to that. So it's
it is as addictive as anything. And it takes a process. It takes a structure. It takes community support. It takes a declaration on the part of the individual. I am going to change this by any means necessary. It really takes it doesn't take any more or any less to come off of sugar than it does to come off of heroin. And I'm not kidding.
Oh, I believe
it's as difficult. And especially because the mind will kick in and say, oh, come on. It's just a cookie. just, you know, a donut. It's just, and then, you know, it isn't just a cookie. It's 10 cookies or it's 6 donuts. And you're just on that track of, wow, this stuff is so insidious. Wow. It's so insidious. So I just want to underline for people who are trying or who ever tried, you know, if you really want to change your diet, there's a way to do it. There's a way to do it that works. And it isn't like a diet. I'm going on a diet. It's like that. I think we all know by now that diets aren't really the thing that work. So, you know, hopefully people will look into Recovery 2.0 and look a little deeper at what we're doing on the food side of things and come have an experience of what it's like to be in a body that doesn't crave anymore.
Absolutely.
You know, that's exciting.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like I said, it's a whole new world. It's a whole new perspective on life, especially with food like alcohol, but food even more so being such a social thing. That was really hard for me in the beginning. And there is a, and I think what you're saying too, and I'll like affirm that, is it's okay that it's going to be hard in the beginning. That's understandable. But there is a moment where you break through and there's like a runner's high kind of deal, and you can eat your, you know, salad with no meat on it when everyone's eating buffalo wings, and you're going to be okay. Like, it's not the end of the world. You actually feel really good. You know, it's
getting there
is hard.
Yeah, more energy. People are like, oh, my protein. And trust me, you can get protein from really healthful sources that don't involve coating them with some kind of sugar.
Yes, agreed. Mm. Well, yeah. I mean, as we talk about this, and you know, I can hear the passion in your voice for all of it, but specifically this too. What else do you think that we need more of today, as far as finding ways for people that are suffering to find peace, to find this world of recovery 2.0, to find a way to connect back to themselves? For me, my big belief is we need more connection. So I was curious, what do you think we need more of? Not that we need to obsess over more, because as addicts, that's a big theme, but what could we replace maybe?
Yeah, no, I hear you. No, you said connection. I was going to say community, which is the same thing. So we have to come out of isolation. We have to stop with shame and guilt. We have to stop that train, the runaway train of shame and guilt. That's what keeps people sick. That's what keeps people feeling like they're different or they're bad, or, you know, if you really knew me, you could never love me. If you knew what I was thinking or the things that I've done. And quite frankly, when you come into recovery, you find out that everybody else has done those things too. And so it's like, you know, okay, I guess I wasn't that special. And I can join the human race, and I can tell somebody, you know, when appropriate, I can tell someone about what's going on with me. And I've got a community of friends around me that are living the things that we're talking about, that we could say to each other, you know what? I had a shitty week with food. Man, it really got the better of me. Wow. Like, I'm really struggling right now. And we can say to each other, yeah, you know what? I've been there. I've so been there. And why don't we try to change things up this next week? Let's go through a little process together. Or, hey, I read this book. Or, hey, there's this podcast. It really inspired me. Like, let's look into that. And, you know, we're not here to not make mistakes. We're going to make mistakes. And anybody who thinks you're not going to make a mistake, like, you're going to be sorely disappointed in yourself. Because we're here to make mistakes, and that's how we learn, and that's how we grow. So we have to understand that despite our humanness, we are lovable. We are loving, that there's a place for us in the world, that we have community, that our community members don't require that we be perfect. And that's not why they're our friends and why we care about each other. You know, my friends make mistakes all the time, just like me, and we're not afraid to admit it. And more than that, we're not afraid to learn from it. And even more than that, we're not afraid to teach from that place. I'm a teacher and I'm a student all of the time. All of the time. It can't be any other way. So the greatest thing that I think we could offer each other is a little bit of a break, an ear when somebody needs to be heard, an eye when somebody needs to be seen. And we get into communities that are centered around this idea of learning and growing. So not just recovery, but learning and growing. And I think if we can do that and do that well and really, you know, humble ourselves to each other, I think we're going to find great outcomes, improved outcomes in our lives as we walk this road together. What do you think?
Yeah. No, I love that. And I love that you said lovable beyond our humanness. I love that. Yeah, yes. All of that. I think what you said about shame, guilt, and fear, I mean, understanding that that's part of the human condition, but you're not alone in it. And it's going to try to isolate you, but step out from it and speak up about it because it has less power.
Yes.
And I mean, that's been so, that's the reason I'm doing this. You know, this podcast is all about, I hope that who out of all the people that may listen, there's one person that feels less alone in what they're feeling, what they're going through. Because that, for so long for me, I know that pain of feeling like I must be the only one. And I really believed it. And it sucked a lot, you know, and to understand there's someone else that's been through it. And maybe they're a few steps ahead of me. And maybe they can just tell me like a tidbit. And if not, they can offer me a hug. And that's even helpful. You know, like you said, whether it's support or guidance or then teaching. And that's the beauty of connection and community is that when we get through something, we pull someone else out of it. And that is so hard to recognize when we're in it. But I that's actually something that's worked for me in recent years is reminding myself like this is going to help someone. So even if it feels like you're going to die, you're going to help the next person in line and they're going to want to die a little bit less, you know? So
100%.
As harsh,
love it.
As harsh as that is, but I mean, that's the reality of what we're dealing with, whether it's addiction or mental illness or just being human. Sometimes we don't want to live through what we're living through. People help that 100%.
Well, we have the same prayer, you and I.
Yes. Yes. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your mission and your story and all of the
pleasure.
Things in between. I'm really, it's an honor to have you here today and learn about you.
Thank you, Grace.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of Curiously Enough. It was a pleasure and an honor to have Tommy Rosen this week. I hope that you enjoyed listening to him as I did interviewing him. It was amazing and really incredible to have him part of our community now. Don't forget to share and subscribe this podcast. Also, reviews are always helpful and we're super grateful to those of you that have done so. And if you haven't already ordered our book at graceguggenheim.com, you can do so. It's the same name as the podcast, Curiously Enough, filled with my story as well as others. See you next week.